Peace, love, and harmony. Welcome back to another episode of Talk Tuesday. I am your host, Bee Harmony, and as always, your support means the absolute world to me. Thank you guys for rocking with me. Season 2 is almost over, and as you guys know, I usually take a little break in between, which is much needed because it is not easy making podcasts. Although you can monetize with no minimum listenership, it's still not an easy task. If you want to find out how it's not that easy, go ahead and make your own podcast. You never know who's going to listen. You don't need any minimum listenership in order to start making money. So why not start a passive income? Who knows how great it could become, just like Harmony Politics. And if you haven't subscribed, make sure that you hit the subscribe button right now. Like this moment right now, make sure that you hit the subscribe button. Make sure you're sharing it with all your friends, because as you know, and for those of you who don't know, if this is your first podcast, here at Harmony Politics, we pride ourselves on making sure that we're bridging the informational gap between politics and our community. You know, understanding politics is not something that's popular in minority communities. The main thing that we hear is, that doesn't apply to me, or I don't care about that, that doesn't matter. We go to work, we come home, we spend time with the family, we pay our bills, and we wake up and we do it all over again. It's as if we're looking for some type of leadership or freedom, so to speak, to get us out of our current situation instead of just focusing on what we need to do. And what we need to do is not take things at face value. Whenever we're told information, especially when it comes to politics, we should question it. We should question it so much so that we're compelled to do our own research and figure out what we believe to be true, our own perception and our own ideologies. That's where leadership truly comes from. So for this episode of Talk Tuesday, we're going to do Looking for a Leader Part 2. As I sat down and prepared to make this podcast, I couldn't help but question myself and wonder, what is a leader? And to me, a leader is someone who is emotionally intelligent. I'm not really concerned with, you know, your education level, or if you went to Ivy League public schools, a HBCU, or even a PWI institute. But being emotionally intelligent means, you know, you acquire your intelligence through experience or education. The best factor to me from a leader is someone who is experienced and who understands what they're supposed to be teaching you as a leader. And leaders bridge any type of gap that there is between the leader and the people, right? So if we're looking for a leader as a country, we turn to our president. Turning to our president, it makes the most practical sense, right? So the president should have the capacity to be aware of what he's saying, control his emotions, and express his emotions, and basically do it judiciously and empathetically. If he can't do those things, then to me, that is not a leader. Now, this is not a podcast to bash Joe Biden. This is actually a podcast that's going to go back over some of the things that he signed into office during his first 100 days. So if you refer back to a couple weeks ago where I did the episode titled Looking for a Leader, we discussed some of the first executive orders that Joe Biden signed while in office. In the first 100 days, he signed about 30 to 40 executive orders. On the first day alone, he actually signed like 30 executive orders. But for the focus of that episode, we only focused on five executive orders that were near and dear to me that I felt like we needed more research on. I had so many questions that I had to go out and actually research it. So we're going to go back over them today in Talk Tuesday's Looking for a Leader Part 2. So the first one we're going to talk about is protecting the federal workers and requiring mask wearing. The second one is ensuring equitable pandemic response and recovery. The third one is revision of civil immigration enforcement policies and priorities. The fourth one is racial equity and support for underserved communities through the federal government. And last but not least, the fifth one is strengthening Medicaid and the Affordable Cares Act. All right, so without further ado, let's get into this Talk Tuesday. Again, make sure that you guys are hitting that subscribe button, you're sharing podcast, because this is truly what leadership is. Leadership is sharing information with those who don't have access. Even if it's something as small as, hey, I heard you're supposed to drink lime water in the morning because it helps with your digestion all day. Oh, word? So she just sharing that information, you might be able to help someone who's having digestion issues that you had no idea about. So from the smallest scale of sharing to just sharing a meme on Instagram or tagging your friend in something that you saw on Instagram that might help them, all the way to making a phone call about something that you saw in the news for a relative who's in that state. even as far as to do these podcasts, we all have a duty to share information. That is what we're here for. We're here to connect with people, to share, interact. And I know during COVID-19, you know, it's hard to do that, especially because of the quarantine. Although we're coming out of it, still need to share our information. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get into Looking for a Leader Part 2. The first one that we're talking about is protecting the federal workers and requiring mask wearing. As I said before, I'm not surprised that Joe Biden implemented this. I mean, come on, he's moving into the White House, and Donald Trump, the previous president, they weren't required to wear a mask. Being that he's, you know, a humanitarian and a Democrat, of course he's all about protecting the people. So he's going to require that. But my question is, how do we go from wearing a mask to wearing one mask? Okay, well, that wasn't enough. So then we're wearing two masks. Okay, now you have to double up. Now we can't wear the mask with the filters because air still is getting in for whatever reason, and you're still susceptible to getting COVID-19. And then we went to one vaccine shot. You know, you don't need a mask in small groups. You get the second shot, you're fully vaccinated. You don't have to have a mask or maintain social distancing. I have so many questions regarding this protecting the federal workers and requiring mask wearing because of the federal government and the level that they're on. Everything that the federal government implements, it trickles down into the states, counties, cities, and things like that, right? So if you're vaccinated, for example, if you're vaccinated and I'm not, why do I have to wear a mask? If you actually have the vaccine and you're safe, if I'm around you and I have COVID-19, you shouldn't get sick, right? That's what the whole point of the vaccination is. Another question that I have is, with the vaccines that are coming up and these new strains that are populating all over the world, how is it that there's no new vaccinations? Why is there no new vaccinations? Why is no one talking about this new strain? And does the previous vaccine actually help against this new strain? Or is this vaccine universal and it protects against all strains of COVID-19, including future strains that we have no idea about? So I agreed with this initially, but I'm wondering, did it actually halt the spread of COVID-19? Like, is there science-based data that backs up the fact that allowing this executive order to take place really did help with the pandemic? I can understand that, you know, when you interact with federal workers, especially like your courthouses, your social services department, your county food stamps or whatever the case is, you know, I understand why it would make you feel better that they have on a mask and it's required for them to have on a mask. But isn't it required anyway to wear a mask? Why does it have to be an executive order for federal workers to wear a mask? That's something that, you know, I definitely found strange and I questioned, because last time I checked, the federal government, the CDC, everyone is saying, you know, to wear the mask to prevent the spread of COVID-19. So why would there be an executive order that takes place to require federal workers to wear a mask? That's something that's just never really set well with me. But at the end of the day, that was an executive order that was signed into action in order for Biden to, you know, keep good on his promises when he ran for office and his plan to limit the spread of COVID-19. So that's the first one. Let's move on to number two, where we're ensuring equitable pandemic response and recovery. Equitable pandemic response and recovery. Interesting executive order. So with this order, basically, Joe Biden is saying that people of color experience systematic and structural racism. We all know it to be true, and are more likely to get sick and die from COVID-19. So he needed to put in an executive order that's going to, I guess you can say, proportionately track the data in minority communities. So the underreporting, overreporting, that's not going to take effect anymore according to this executive order, because you have a diverse group who are representing each minority group when it comes to collecting data. It's kind of like a census, so to speak, and they're collecting the data and returning it back to the government. If you guys don't know what a census is or how that works, I have an episode on the census, so you guys can definitely check that out where I break down exactly what that is. So this diverse task force that's responsible for collecting data on how the pandemic, aka COVID-19, is affecting your minority group is also responsible for coming up with ways to combat that, so that way, you know, your community is not lacking in any means when it comes to receiving treatment and care when it comes to COVID-19. But let's take it a step further. So with this executive order ensuring equitable pandemic response and recovery, we can't talk about this executive order without now, after the 100 days, talking about vaccine passports, people. So this is a tricky conversation. We have some states who are for it, some states who are not for it, and we have some states who are on the fence waiting to see more data and things like that. So some of the states who came out and are openly against it are Idaho, Utah, Iowa, Georgia, Montana, Florida, Tennessee, Texas, just to name a few. Some states that are allowing it, Hawaii and Illinois. The first state to ever do this program is New York, of course, as being New York was the epicenter of COVID-19. It makes sense that they were the first to launch this technology-based program where you have a vaccine card or actually, it was going to be an app now where you have the app on your phone and they'll see if you're vaccinated. So this is a slippery slope. And I wasn't sure that it would get this far when I originally did the Looking for a Leader Part 1 podcast. But now that we're here, let's dive into it. Now, we know that there is racial and social issues in this country. We know that there's a such thing as economic oppression. We know that there's a such thing as government oppression. And if you don't know that, let me explain to you how this executive order can actually harm minority communities. So we have these vaccine passports, right? Say that it does take effect. Now, 9 times out of 10, minorities have a hard time traveling internationally. A, it costs a lot. And then B, you have to get a passport. Now, what do we know about minorities in these countries? Where do they fill up? The jails, the prisons, right? So if you have been to jail or prison, depending on what your record is, if you've been discipline free for a certain amount of time, according to your state, then you can or cannot get a passport. So that's already the first hindrance. The second hindrance is getting the vaccine passport. How can you get the vaccine passport when we know that COVID-19 care and outcomes within communities of color and other undeserved populations are different? The way that communities of color are treated when it comes to this vaccine is totally different than that of those people who are, you know, of a higher economic status. So I'm not saying that Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, Pfizer, or any other ones, vaccines that are out there, I'm not saying they're bad. I'm also not saying that they're good. But I believe that there is a difference in treatment when it comes to the vaccines. There's a difference in ingredients, the higher grade of ingredients, lower dosage for those people who are on Medicaid and Medi-Cal. If you don't believe me, just look at how long it takes to get an appointment to get a vaccine if you are on public health care, which is your Medicaid, your Medi-Cal, your IEHPs, depending on whatever state you're in, that is your free health care. As opposed to if you pay or know someone who pays for their healthcare, how fast they were able to get the vaccine. So being that, you know, there's a diverse group, quote unquote, to represent people in response and recovery to the pandemic, how are these vaccine passports going to be, how is this vaccine passport issue going to be addressed when it comes to minority communities? That's the bigger question here. And I did not find any research on that like I wanted to. And I'm really sad about that, but at the same time, I have to remember that this is still in the works. So this is definitely something that we're gonna come back to because this is a conversation that, you know, can't get lost. This is a type of conversation that deserves its own podcast in itself, and it'll definitely be coming. So make sure that you're staying tuned. And while staying tuned in, make sure that you hit the subscribe button. We move on to our third executive order, which is the revision of civil immigration enforcement policies and priorities. Now, like I said before, this is Looking Forward Part 2. So if you don't know what this is, I'm not going to go into details about it. Go ahead and check back to the previous episode where I went into a very extensive conversation on this executive order. So with this executive order, pretty much, let me just read a couple sentences from the actual executive order itself. So it states that the policy of my administration is to protect national and border security, address the humanitarian challenges at the southern border, and ensure public health and safety. My administration will reset the policies and practices for enforcing civil immigration laws to align enforcement with these values and priorities. Now let's let that sink in for a moment. This executive order is to reinforce and align policies with the same values and priorities that Biden feels are necessary for his administration. Now, I agree with him on this. I agree that, you know, when we saw the children in cages, that they shouldn't have been taken from their parents. I agree that there's immigrants who come to this country who work hard and they shouldn't be deported based off of not passing something as simple as a test that goes over the history of America, when half the Americans here don't know half the answers to that question. And if you guys want to, for fun, I highly encourage you to actually check out some samples of the test to see if you yourself can pass it and see how American is, how American are you to isolate an entire group of people based off the fact that they don't know things that you yourself don't even know about this country. I guarantee there's going to be a few questions on there that you don't know. And it's okay that you don't know it, right? Because you have your citizenship status. You're good. You don't have to worry about deportation or immigration. But for people who don't, you know, it's not okay for them. And this revision checks that. There's a thing called checks and balances in place for a reason, and I am 100% okay with this executive order being signed, because not only does it call for a department-wide review of civil immigration enforcement policies, but it also allows each state to operate how it sees fit under the guise of the general immigration. And being that we just heard Joe Biden's administration say he will be enforcing civil immigration laws to align with his values and priorities. If you followed Biden's administration or even his political career, he's always been an advocate for quote-unquote immigration enforcement policies and priorities. So this one right here is great. I'm happy that to see that there's still success in it. They're appointing people who understand the issues, who have emotional intelligence and the capability to make leadership decisions that are going to specifically help this one group. Now, I'm not saying that this is a fixed solution for all immigration, but this is a good step. But there's other steps that need to be taken too, not just for one specific demographic. Which leads me into our fourth executive order that was signed, which is racial equity and support for underserved communities through the federal government. Now, this is the fundamental program for equal opportunity, right? America is a democracy, and one of the greatest things about this country is our diversity and how we are so strong because we are so different. But being that we are so different, it also leads to division. Now let's look at it through the pandemic, right? So if we look at unemployment rates, you have about 25% of white workers who are on unemployment versus 13% of African Americans and 12% of Hispanics. Now look at those numbers in itself. Take a moment to really understand what those are. Let me repeat it back to you. So the unemployment rates during the pandemic, you have 25% of white workers who are on unemployment, 13% of blacks who are on unemployment, and 12% of Hispanics who are on unemployment during the year that the pandemic has been in, right? Some might say that this is actually a comprehensive approach to advancing equity for all, being that you have a higher percentage of white workers who are on unemployment versus that of your black and brown community. Well, why is that? Let's take a look at this. Let's dig a little bit deeper into racial equity and support for underserved communities through federal government. So when we look at these numbers, your 25% of white people who are on unemployment, your 13% of black people, and your 12% of Hispanics who are on unemployment, what type of jobs are they? So your 25% of white workers who are on unemployment are coming from jobs, marketing, advertisement, investment bankers, things like that, right? Your higher paying jobs, people, you find more of the white percentage on unemployment from that. Now that's due to, you know, their businesses shutting down or being postponed, outsourcing, maybe working from home, or a reduction in hours, things like that. Now let's go to your 13%, which is a small percentage compared to the 25% of white workers who are on unemployment. But that 13% comes from those black people who are not just the 13%, let me put in the 12% too, because your minority communities, your black and browns, most of the time they were the jobs that were essential. Your warehouse workers, your truck drivers, your Walmart workers, your grocery store workers, essential jobs, jobs that are only quote-unquote necessary to function in a day-to-day basis. So of course the number is going to be lower because those jobs are increasing as the pandemic grew and grew. You know, there's a more of a need for people to work at warehouses now. Everybody's going out and hoarding toilet tissue for whatever reason. You have the food industry that's increasing. Why? Because people are eating at home now. They're not eating at restaurants. So you have a higher chance of hiring Blacks and Hispanics for those essential working positions than you do of the white workers who are on unemployment. Now, this is not bashing anyone who's on unemployment. Definitely, you know, I feel for you and I understand that this pandemic was rough on the entire world, not just Black and brown people, but all people, right? And that's the whole point of this executive order, to create opportunities to improve communities that have been historically underserved. And when we talk about historically underserved communities, we are talking about your Black and brown communities. So how well do these programs protect and provide opportunities to communities who are underserved in the world? So for me, when I was doing my research, I could not find an answer to that, because although this is an executive order that was signed, the purpose of it is to provide equity that's consistent and systematically fair. What about unemployment is actually fair? You have people, to take it a step further with this executive order, you have Black people who are receiving a lower weekly amount than that of their quote-unquote white counterparts who may have had the same exact job. So there's still some systematic issues that are in place, and I don't expect Joe Biden or Kamala Harris to be able to fix this in a matter of 100 days, but I do expect it to be addressed. And I'm very disappointed that Kamala Harris is not speaking out more so on this specific executive order, being that she flip-flopped when she ran for president. She kind of had a different ideology or a different speech when it came to racial equity. And now that she's vice president serving under Joe Biden, it's kind of, I'm not saying she's silenced, but I just would personally like for her to speak out more about that, which is another podcast that we are definitely going to be doing on this executive order in itself, because it's amazing to me how we live in a world where we pretend like systematic oppression doesn't exist, or it happened so long ago, so there should be no issue anymore. Like, that can't be an excuse. Now, I hear you. I agree with you. You know, there's some things that have happened a long time ago that are not an excuse today. But let's not forget, because of those things happen, it's a cause and effect, and the effects are still here. So we're not blaming one particular event or one isolated event. But just understand that that isolated event has created a conundrum for an entire demographic of people. So for this order, within 6 months of the date, which is January 21st, there should be some type of report that's coming up. So we'll definitely have an entire episode that's based on this one. And for our last and final point of Looking Forward Part 2, we're going to talk about strengthening Medicaid and the Affordable Cares Act. It's not too much to really say on this, because the title speaks for itself, Strengthening Medicaid and the Affordable Cares Act, right? I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. The point of this is to, well, one thing that it did do that I find, you know, helpful to Black and brown communities is a special enrollment period. So in March of 2020, you know, it was declared a national emergency. Almost a year had passed since COVID-19 happened, and you still had so many people who weren't receiving care because of their insurance and things like that. So when Biden declared COVID-19 and Medicaid as part of the national emergency, a lot of people received care, and those that were uninsured were now able to get help because of this executive order. With that final thought, I'm just going to leave you guys with, you know, my review of Biden's 100 days in office. For me personally, I usually don't give my opinion, especially on the podcast, because people feel like once I give my opinion, I'm trying to preach to them or sway them from whatever thought they have, when the whole point of Harmony Politics is research-based, which is your knowledge, wisdom, and understanding portion of Harmony Politics. But for the first 100 days of Biden's, I will say this. I would like to see a more transparent administration. I would like to see more bipartisanship take place. And I would like to personally see Kamala Harris, a woman of color like myself, speak out more so about the color issues and social injustices that are happening in this country, and not say things like America is not racist. I get the point of what she was trying to say and the message, but her delivery was terrible. And, you know, I would like to see more transparency in the Biden-Harris administration, because as you all know, Joe Biden said you are not Black if you do not vote for him. Thank you guys for checking out this episode. Peace and love.